Welcome to the podcast hosted by the Association for Women in Cryptocurrency, sponsored by Bracewell LLP. Bracewell is a leading law and government relations firm whose award-winning teams lead the market in cutting-edge transactions and litigation, regulatory matters, and government relations. You can learn more at bracewell.com. Today's topic is crypto mining and insurance. Anything and everything you would want to know about mining and why it's important to understand. The Association is a global professional network of women and male allies around the world who advocate for the equitable inclusion of women in the future of digital finance, blockchain technology, and Web3. The views of the speakers are their own and do not necessarily represent those of their employers, the association, its sponsors, or its board of directors. This podcast is our opportunity to showcase the incredible work being done by our members around the world in the crypto, blockchain, and Web3 industries. I'm your host, Amanda Wick, founder and CEO of the Association for Women in Cryptocurrency. And I'm incredibly excited to introduce you to Jamie Leverton and Sarah Leone. Jamie Leverton is a tech veteran from Canada with more than two decades of experience in finance and technology. From December 2020 to February of 2024, she served as the CEO of Hut 8, one of the largest publicly traded digital asset mining firms. Before diving into cryptocurrency, Leverton worked in various senior executive roles at some of Canada's most prominent tech firms, including eStructure Data Centers, Cogeco Pier 1, National Bank, BlackBerry, Bell Canada, and IBM Canada. Sarah Leone is the lead property underwriter and senior compliance officer for Evertas, the world's first crypto insurance company, and has personally underwritten about 27% of the global hash rate. Leone graduated from Colorado State University with a bachelor's degree in communications. She was also a Division I NCAA and professional athlete, playing water polo all around the world. She received her master's degree in law, risk management, and compliance in 2022 from St. Mary's University in San Antonio, Texas, prior to committing her career to the cryptocurrency space. She plans to attend law school in the future to procure her JD, but for now is enjoying being a busy mom of two while balancing an active and growing career in cryptocurrency insurance. I couldn't be more excited to have two people talking about this topic, and I can't think of two better people to talk about this topic. So let's just jump in. I would love to hear your, especially given the fascinating backgrounds you both have, I'd love to hear your origin stories in terms of how you got into crypto and mining especially. And Sarah, why don't we start with you?
Absolutely. Well, I got into crypto first investing just in Bitcoin, ETH, all those fun coins back in 2016. This was around the time that we discovered that we were expecting our first child and we were just looking to kind of expand our portfolio a little bit more. My partner, Tom Shuchuk, who is also my partner through Evertas, kind of introduced me to the world of crypto. And we just started having all these conversations because he was in the same boat too. They had just had their first child as well. So we were just looking to expose ourselves to, you know, new investment opportunities, and crypto got us very excited. Fast forward to 2022, Tom founded Bitshirt and asked me to jump ship from my contract analyst position with a very large national carrier to come join him and take on this crypto space and introduce an insurance product. And we did pretty well our first year, and Evertas acquired us at the beginning of last year. And here we are today. We just continue to roll forward. So
very cool. Now, Jamie, I will say Sarah and I had the same reaction when we were able to get you on the show. We were very excited. You are officially OG mining royalty, as it is known. And so I saved your origin story because I think both Sarah and I just kind of want to sit and listen and hear it. So I think we're both going to fangirl for a moment while you talk about how you got into mining and how you became essentially the queen of crypto mining.
Well, that's you're really setting me up there, ladies. I'm blushing. I think my whole origin story, I won't do the long version. I'll do the abridged version, which is specific to how I got into mining. But really the second half of my career, as I like to refer to it, the first half I spent with IBM. I was there from 2000 till 2009. And then the second half of my career has been really focused on transformation mandates, going into underperforming business units or companies and driving a mandate for transformation or high growth. And after spending some time within the financial sector, kind of partway through my second decade of my career, I really felt like it needed to be disrupted, but I felt like that disruption was going to have to come from an external force. An external forcing function was going to cause the disruption. just because the way the structure is set up today, there really isn't an incentive for them to change. They're almost disincentivized to change or drive internal transformation. So I went looking to see if there might be something out there that could create that disruption. Disruption and transformation is, as my best friend likes to tell me, it's my kink. So I did look, I went looking and found Bitcoin, and that was in 2017. I had spent a lot of my career in the data center space, data center infrastructure. And I was in one of those roles at the time as general manager for Canada and Asia Pacific for Cogeco Pier 1. And we started to get all of this demand coming, like big demand, people looking for a megawatt, 2 megawatts. And typically that kind of demand profile you would only see from the big hyperscalers. Like at that time, that was a lot of power to try to take down. And so I went trying to figure out where this demand was coming from. And so that was the 2017 bull market, and miners were searching everywhere for power, and they were willing to pay traditional data center prices to plug their machines in. Everybody was just trying to get machines online. And so that was my introduction to the space. And at that time, a lot of us in the traditional data center world were trying to figure out, could this kind of computing technology could coexist? Was there a place for ASIC mining or Bitcoin mining in the traditional data center world? Ultimately, that answer is no. And then long story short, the Hut 8, which is the company that I most recently was the CEO of, their board of directors was looking for somebody to come into the CEO role after they'd gone through a particularly tumultuous period during the downturn of 2020. The COVID liquidity crisis affected Bitcoin as well. And so they wanted somebody to come in to take over that had a background in transformation, that understood how Bitcoin mining worked, that could bring in a diversification mandate for the company. And ultimately, the board decided and I decided that we thought that would be the right fit. And that is that's how I got into mining back in the fall of 2020.
So I definitely want to come back. There were a lot of really good nuggets in what you said. I definitely want to come back to that. But I definitely want to ask the question that I think is on my mind and on a lot of women's minds when we talk about mining. I went to, I think, Bitcoin Miami last year and was walking around the conference, especially the mining area, and there were no women. And I think it's one of the areas of the ecosystem.
There was you.
And I must have walked right past you because I swear I looked at every booth. And aside from, unfortunately, this is where I learned the term booth babes, which is a discussion for another day.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, but I just was really surprised. And you know, talking with Sarah, it seems like there are just not a lot of women in mining. And I'm curious if you guys have thoughts, like, where are they? And why do you think there are so few women in this space?
Look, I think, unfortunately, the answer I'm going to give you is a depressing one, which is it's not the representation of women in mining very closely mirrors, especially at the senior leadership level, very closely mirrors the representation of women at senior levels of tech and at senior levels of finance, particularly within capital markets. I don't think it's unique to mining. I think it's similar to other in parallel industries to the space. There are a few incredible women in the space. We do all know each other. I'm actually at Bitcoin Miami. Nat Brunel hosted a Women in Bitcoin brunch, which was incredibly well attended. So there aren't a lot of us, that's true. But those of us that are there are incredibly supportive, very collaborative, constantly looking out for one another and building each other up, which I do think is actually a positive anomaly within the mining space. There isn't as much of a feeling of scarcity or trying to compete against each other because there's only room for, you know, a few women. It is an incredibly welcoming environment for women in the space, but there truly aren't enough of us. I would say they're there if you go looking for them. So when I took over Hut 8, I think there were maybe two other women on the entire staff. But quickly, we ended up with a senior leadership team and a board that was represented by over 40% women. And that's actually a bigger conversation that we could get into about people say, oh, there are no women here, but have you really gone looking for women? Because if you go looking and you kind of really think about the skill set for the job, you can find them and they do incredible work. And I was a big beneficiary of how that diversity can really catapult a company forward.
Yeah. And I will say, I think you're right that there are parallels, I think, to certain aspects of tech, right? And there are certain pockets where you see like engineering and product where you just have a pipeline product, where the heavier something tends to be in terms of engineering and technology, frankly, like the less women that are going to be in it. And I think that's a discussion that the women in STEM discussion is far longer than we have time to get into today.
Absolutely.
But speaking of like the tech aspects, I would be remiss if we didn't jump in and talk about maybe like a little crash course in mining. I talk to a lot of people who are in crypto. They've been in crypto years and will kind of on the DL be like, I don't really understand what mining is. Like if I was honest about it, but I get it. It makes new Bitcoin magic happens. There's elves in the machine. But if maybe we could talk for a moment about like what it really is, what is proof of work? Like what is it when we're talking about mining?
Yeah. I mean, think about a Bitcoin mine as a very, very large data center, but really stripped down. A Bitcoin mine doesn't need kind of the diversity, the security, the same environmentals that a traditional data center would have. But ultimately, it's a lot of power plugged into a lot of compute servers. But instead of having an end customer on the end, the servers are entirely focused at solving the algorithms on the network. I'm not going to go into the detail of how the math work. It's cryptographic, it's pre-programmed. But if you think about these computers are all connected to each other all around the world, and Bitcoin miners are ultimately, they're responsible for the entire security of the Bitcoin blockchain. So Bitcoin only remains secure because the miners are securing the network. And new Bitcoin only comes into circulation because miners bring it into circulation through the block rewards. So you can think about a miner as the security layer, but also the mint. And then they are also responsible for the processing of all of the transactions that occur on the network. So we're kind of the Visa MasterCard of Bitcoin, the mint of Bitcoin, and the security layer of Bitcoin, all of which happens through cryptography happening on a network of computers globally that are all connected, working on the same problems. And we can get into the more technical side of how they work and their relationship between mines and power and the grid, which is always a really hot topic and an important one for us to continue to have. But ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what Bitcoin miners are responsible for. There is no Bitcoin without Bitcoin miners, period.
Well, and I do want to touch on one thing, because I remember like my best friend's husband was mining out of his garage years ago.
A lot of fires.
Yeah. Well, so you went exactly where I was headed, which was the heat that these things put off was insane. And this was just like a home kit. And so Sarah, you know, I remember talking with her and saying, does your homeowner's insurance cover this if God forbid something happens? Because I think people forget about insurance when you're running very big, hot things. And so I'm curious, I mean, like I know the olden days of, I imagine people mining in their garages is done now just because of the sheer computing power that's required. I guess maybe you've had a really big garage, but the insurance aspect.
You'd be surprised, Amanda.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Really? Are there still like homes?
You would be surprised. Yeah, it still happens.
People are still running this out of garages, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They think it's cheaper.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or free power.
Wow. Well, I guess in my head, I thought of like, you know, how people used to kind of like jerry rig, like power lines or something, or you'd plug into like your neighbors. But it just didn't occur to me that level of computing power, that stealing power was still possible. But I should never underestimate the ingenuity of thieves. But I do kind of.
And nerds.
And nerds. But I am kind of curious, like, you know, that's a lot to go through. The insurance part, I think, is something that people always forget. And Sarah, I know that's your specialty. And I'm just kind of curious, in terms of insurance and mining, how often do you see people kind of get into trouble in terms of getting into a business that you'd think would really need insurance, but I imagine people don't think a lot about?
Yeah, it's true. I think just in general, when businesses are starting out, it's a new business. The first thought on your mind when you're starting your business isn't really, I need to get some insurance right away. But the reality of the situation is a lot of these miners, especially if you're leasing land or leasing buildings, large commercial structures, a lot of times a landlord's going to require some sort of liability coverage in place before they even allow you to access the property to start operating your business. And so I think a lot of business owners tend to forget that that's something that they need. And in addition to forgetting that they're going to need that, they also forget that they need to kind of allots some money towards your insurance premiums, because people don't think that insurance is important until you need it, right? And that's usually when you're in some dire straits, you're not really sure what's going on, you suffer some damage from, let's just say, a fire, and you don't have insurance, and you're just like, wow, I didn't realize how expensive this would be to get me back up on my feet. But it can be pretty expensive, because there's other costs that come into place when you're repairing a damaged building or container. So it's very important. You want to protect your assets, right? You want to protect the things that you care about, the things that help you maintain your living. And your ASIC, your mining computer, is definitely that piece of equipment that you want to protect.
Well, I think it's really funny because you say that, and somewhere out there, somebody's going to be like, I would never forget that. And I'm a lawyer. And when I started the Association for Women in Crypto, one of my board members said, we need D&O insurance. Okay, so go out, right? Talk to an amazing broker. She's incredible. I say to her, this is what we need. And then months into the conversation, she said, well, where did you get your general liability insurance? I said, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
Because despite, just didn't think about it. She was like, well, don't you do events all around the world? And as soon as she said it, I was like, how did we forget this? But you're just moving, right? 1,000 miles an hour.
Yes.
You're doing all of the things. And then before you know it, you've built something, you're working on something, and insurance is the last thing on your mind, you know?
Yes, exactly.
And to your point earlier, I mean, it's probably not the same as just the same policy you would get with a, like if you're just a normal landlord and you're looking at, you know, property insurance, I imagine it doesn't cover that. You'd probably need some kind of like separate special insurance.
No, so at Evertas, we actually have proprietary products built specifically for the crypto mining industry, for the crypto mining space, which are very different from your standard commercial property, your standard commercial general liability, or even your standard inland marine. These policies, these products are built specifically for the cryptocurrency mining industry. Our D&O products, any professional services products we offer, we only offer insurance products for crypto mining and crypto asset companies. We don't do anything outside of that because we understand that a risk like crypto mining is very unique and very different from a lot of other business risks that exist and that insurance markets essentially have a product for. And when we were first entering the market as a company, whether it was BitShare or Evertas, and we were starting to talk to agents and brokers about their clients and their crypto mining clients, what was happening was that a lot of these markets were realizing that they didn't quite understand what crypto mining was, what that risk actually meant, what the different general everyday business risks that can occur are very different from a lot of other standard businesses. And so they realized that the contract that they were giving to these crypto miners wasn't adequately protecting them because it was just an entirely completely different class of risk that belonged on an entirely different program. And so we were able to kind of recognize this and got ahead of the eight ball back in 2020, took some time, built these products with some industry experts in insurance and kind of married the two spaces together and came out with these products. And we've actually been working with these products since May of 2022, but it's pretty common that we'll see a crypto miner come from a standard market and be non-renewed because the insurance carrier realized they didn't understand the risk. And so then they came to us and said, is there something you can do? This is a situation. We're like, this is exactly what we can do because this is exactly who we're built for and who we're supposed to be servicing. And that's crypto mining.
I don't think people realize how much difficulty you can have in this area. Just when we, the Association for Women in Cryptocurrency, opened a business bank account at Bank of America, I had to be on the phone for 3 hours explaining to them that we were not a money services business simply because we had the word cryptocurrency in our name. And so I don't think people realize there's, and Jamie, I'm curious if you encountered this, but I don't think people realize there's a certain amount of bias in terms of difficulties in getting insurance, difficulties with bank accounts. I don't know if you experienced that, but I was shocked as just a professional association how difficult it was because we had crypto in our name to just open a bank account.
Yeah, it is really challenging, especially for new entrants in the space. I think it was protected a little bit because we'd been around so long. We were public and had a strong governance and fundamentals. But my husband is the president of a Canadian insurance brokerage. And so every time I take on a new job, his first questions are about insurance and what's the D&O coverage and what are the policies. He wants to make sure everything's in place before we take on risk that could transfer. If it's not the right package, it could transfer to a personal liability. So It's always very top of mind in my household. And I will say we moved the company from Canada to the US on the back of our last merger. And that completely changed the landscape. We had to start banking conversations over again. It changed our insurance conversation. Once we weren't a Canadian headquartered company, we're becoming US domiciled. Really a completely, completely different environment. And I would say much, much more complicated towards crypto than historically Canada had been.
So I do want to go back because you alluded to something earlier, which is kind of like, I think one of the spicier topics related to mining, and that is the energy debate, because we couldn't have a discussion about mining without talking about that. And especially with all the discussions about ESG and sustainability. I'm curious because during the prep call, Jamie, you told me some things that kind of blew my mind, which I thought were really interesting.
Yeah, I think one of the things I mentioned, I actually spoke at COP this past year in Dubai, which was the first, it was the one and only Bitcoin mining conversation that they had at COP. And I was very nervous about it. I was afraid they would throw projectiles at us, but it ended up being an incredibly powerful and really, really well-received conversation. Because I think one of the biggest challenges for the mining space is people not understanding, reading the headlines and not really doing the work to understand how beneficial mining can be when it's used in the right way with local communities and with local power producers. One of the nice things that has happened over the last 6 months is we've actually seen some good research come out from really credible, objective third parties. Even Greenpeace wrote a nice piece. KPMG published a great white paper on the benefits of Bitcoin mining to the renewables transition. And I could spend a lot of time talking about that and obviously happy to answer any questions. But I think the biggest thing people don't understand and the most important differentiator between Bitcoin mining's use of power and all other industrial scale power off-takers, including traditional data centers, traditional cloud. Now we're seeing a lot of conversations about artificial intelligence and the power required for those workloads. All of those kind of traditional compute workloads require that power to be available 99.999% of the time. So they are a constant draw on the grid, a constant user of power. That is entirely different from how a Bitcoin mine, your typical industrial scale Bitcoin mine, is actually an intermittent load. A Bitcoin miner's number one operating expense is power. And it's directly related to their profitability. So Bitcoin miners are disincented to run during periods of peak demand, because when price goes up, they're no longer profitable. And so their incentive is actually to shut down during peak periods. So what you see with most Bitcoin miners is they're actually working directly with the power producer and the local constituency to say, they'll only use the power when it's not required by the grid for peak demand. So they'll shut down. They can shut down within minutes, sometimes within seconds, depending on the software that the miner's running. And they can do that in whatever increment is required, from shutting down the entire load that they're using to feed that back into the grid, or just incremental, again, depending on what the needs of the community are. And so what that really allows a power producer to do is they can, if they work a Bitcoin mine into their program, into the infrastructure, into the community, they can make sure that the grid is constantly being monetized and balanced for peak demand and for the management of loads. A lot of power, like a ton of power in the US is driven off natural gas, and natural gas has to have stable, constant offtake. It's not, those aren't power plants that can be powered on and off willy-nilly. The magic here for Bitcoin mining with power producers and with the grid is that they work together to make sure that the miner is not taking demand from the community or the grid when it needs it, but they're always there to make sure that the load is stable and is ultimately monetized. And there are tons of beautiful examples that I could go into where that works seamlessly and allows for new job creation, incremental tax revenues to go into, in particular, more rural communities that haven't had that kind of opportunity before.
But I guess the issue is that essentially they can run at night when people aren't drawing, or at times of the day where it's basically maintaining a balance so that the draw of power is just kind of hovering at the same level and you're not having these spikes of tons of power, no power.
Exactly. Exactly. You generally peak only occurs 10% or less in a given year. That's how small it is. But you have to have a grid that's built out to support that demand 100% of the time. The beauty of a miner is they're almost like an industrial scale battery. They're there to take power when it's available and give it back when it's required for more important constituents or off-takers. And when we think about this in the context of the transition to renewables, renewables are intermittent power sources. So they're not always required on a grid, and they're not always available to feed a grid. But again, if you work a miner, which is a flexible load, in with your renewable project planning with the other power sources on a grid, if all of that is done together, the miner, because it's always monetizing the power load that's available on the grid, which isn't available through any other industrial scale offtaker, that actually can support renewable projects without government intervention, without government funding, in a way that doesn't exist in other industries, because other industries aren't flexible.
And maybe that's a great segue into what's essentially a discussion about the evolution of mining, because I always got the impression that basically, like, you know, my friend's husband, like, he just ran that thing 24/7 in his garage.
Right.
Like, I don't think he was looking right at the cost of electricity.
He
wasn't looking at
money.
Seasons. At the very beginning, I think he was doing okay. I think at a certain point, cost of electricity, cost of cooling, et cetera, right? But I do think, I imagine at some point, basically professional miners figured out that it does not pay to run all day. And to your point, and I don't think I realized or knew, like, the aspect of professional mining is essentially finding the sweet spot of when is the electricity, the cost of the power necessary to do the computing justify, or like the sweet spot for then when is the computing making you enough money for there to be profitability. And so this idea
right.
that it's like the old days where somebody was just running an ASIC card in their garage 24/7. Only idiots are doing that. not that he's an idiot. He's a lovely person. I don't think they're doing it anymore, but I just think it's probably gotten more complex.
It absolutely has. And by necessity, the technology's gotten exponentially more advanced and more efficient. So we're using less power per machine to consume the same hash rate, if you will. And that will continue. It's just Moore's law. Like, efficiency is constantly getting driven into the system on the technology side. But really where the magic, I think the magic is happening is in these more strategic, thoughtful relationships, in particular between miners and power producers. And there's a ton of really exciting stuff happening with Bitcoin mining and waste energy, whether that's waste energy from landfills, where they're able to capture methane and use that to power mining equipment, which means the CO2 is not being admitted into the atmosphere at the same levels, or in flare gas. So miners are going into flare gas sites. And again, using that to power mining equipment directly in the field, which just dramatically reduces the amount of carbon being emitted into the atmosphere at those flare sites. So where miners can partner with oil and gas companies and work together to reduce waste emissions directly in locations where there isn't fiber, there's not a population, there's no other way to consume, but a Bitcoin mine that can travel to remote areas like this and actually act as a carbon reduction mechanism is really exciting. And we're seeing a ton of great advances and new people coming into that space as well.
Yeah. And it's just wanted to piggyback off of what Jamie is saying. I'm very much seeing this on our side of the business as well in insurance. The growth, I mean, they've been mining globally for, you know, years, but the growth occurring globally in landfills and other areas where there is essentially waste or, you know, expendable energy that is just literally going to waste is now being reused and recycled through crypto mining. And there's a huge growth, a huge boom in South America right now.
Africa.
Yep. Africa. I was just going to mention Africa. Just really big booms occurring globally, not just, this isn't just US based.
There's a great documentary for any of your listeners that are interested in learning more about this. There is an amazing documentary that's coming, either just came out or coming out shortly, called Dirty Coin. Atlanta Media Villa produced it, and it's excellent. She already released a short, but it goes into exactly this conversation about how Bitcoin mining is doing this incredible work on waste energy, carbon reduction, and bringing new sources of revenue and therefore power into remote communities all over the world, in particular in Africa and South America.
Well, and I guess I was going to touch on that, because at least you mentioned speaking, I think, at COP21. And I think it's a really interesting dynamic, because right now, you know, I just got back from Paris Blockchain Week and the discussion of kind of what's happening financially. But I also think people are kind of sleeping on the dichotomy of both the rise of alternative cryptocurrencies, virtual currencies, digital currencies, all kinds of different currencies. And then also the rise of kind of the ability to have a little bit more autonomy for some of these countries, the ability not to be so dependent on others, either for their financial systems or their sources of energy, and kind of a re-leveling of a playing field. And I think we spend a lot of time talking about the geopolitics of kind of digital finance and what's going to happen at the currency level, but we don't spend as much time talking about like what the technological impact these technologies are having. For example, countries that are able to, like you said, capture energy, possibly even generate revenue, do new things with a technology that maybe developed countries didn't need as much, but lesser developed countries can find huge benefits to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I guess in terms of the future of mining and where you think we're going, I mean, you mentioned some really cool projects. I am surprised at how far it's come, given the last time I checked in and it was churning and burning in my friend's garage. But both of you, I'd love to know like where you think it's headed, what's kind of on the horizon for mining.
I think we have touched on most of it. I think waste energy is going to be a really, really key area of focus. I think emerging markets, South America, Africa in particular, really, really investing and getting excited about the space. I think North America is still trying to figure out its views from a sentiment and regulatory perspective on mining. We've still got some heavy lifting to do to get the clarity we need, and really the education. I think in the industry, we've spent really the last 3 years focused on getting more coordinated, doing more education, doing more active outreach. I think one of the challenges we had as an industry was, you know, we've got libertarian roots, kind of anti-centralization, and that kind of inhibited us as an industry from having those conversations and doing that education and doing that outreach, and kind of probably inadvertently helped create more pushback and more resistance to us as a result of it. So I think we have done a much better job over the last 3 years. I mean, part of it started when we formed the Bitcoin Mining Council in May of 2021. And frankly, that was a reaction to Elon Musk sending a tweet, unfortunately, the night before my Q1 earnings. So I remember it quite well, about Tesla no longer accepting Bitcoin. And so as an industry, a group of us got together and said, this is like an existential threat. If we don't get ahead of it and start doing a better job of kind of educating, it could be a risk for Bitcoin in general. And so I would say we've done a much, much better job as a space over the last 3 years, but we still have a lot of work to do, and we clearly don't have consensus or clarity at a federal level in either Canada or the US.
I would agree with a lot of the points Jamie mentioned. There's just a lot of misinformation just surrounding crypto mining, and it comes from all facets, really. I mean, there's not one specific bad guy you could name. I think just the reality of a situation is just, I mean, I know, Jamie, I know.
I feel like there is a bad guy that you both want to name.
We're not going to say it. We're not going to say your name.
Which I'm like, I'm totally here for.
But if you see us at a party, you can ask us.
Yes. I'll tell you. Okay. I was like, because if it doesn't rhyme with Shmezabeth Foreign, then I'll move on.
There's just always been a lot of misinformation, you know, the couple of years that I've been involved in the space, you know, and just the misinformation just seems to be pushed as truth. And what we've tried to do on our end of the token is try and kindly correct that misinformation with what we know to be fact, right? With a lot of what we just talked about and how we can use energy and how we're actually not bad guys and just putting all these harmful chemicals into the atmosphere. Like that's not what we're doing. I think what is going to be really interesting is not only how crypto mining continues to evolve, but how insurance and the insurance space continues to evolve with the crypto mine as well. We're very much in a very exciting time right now, with Evertas being, you know, the first crypto asset, crypto insurer out there. We're starting to see a lot more interest, you know, in other markets and asking us questions about how we do what we do, how we've gotten involved, how we have the knowledge that we do. And it's just, we're crypto miners first. That's really what it is. And we just happen to have already begun careers in insurance, and we just found a way to put the two together. So
Sarah, on that point, do you guys underwrite companies around the world outside of North America?
Yes. Actually, I am extremely busy with mostly international risks right now. We have a lot of US-based risks, Canadian risks, but I mean, the demand for global coverage is definitely picking up. I've been all over the world in terms of underwriting. So it's very exciting to see. And it's also very exciting to be able to witness these companies come into countries and kind of better that situation for them, creating jobs, helping the environment. These are things that these crypto miners are doing. And I hope in the future we can start talking about these positives rather than all this just misinformation that just isn't correct.
Yeah, I will say, I think, I don't know if Jamie touched on it earlier, or I can't remember which one of you said it, but there's a very terrible, horrible pattern in the United States right now, I think on both sides, where the divisiveness and the political gamesmanship has kind of overtaken fact. And you see in some of these other countries, I mean, I can't even, I think I was in 13 countries last year, and literally everyone on the outside is kind of like, what happens there? How on earth can you have a conversation where fact, like you can't even discuss things without like a baseline understanding, like the amount of misinformation and the amount of politicization on both sides that kind of hurts us? Where if we can't have a talk about energy, if we can't have a talk about power grids, these should be things that we should be able to kind of have an objective conversation about. Are there pluses? Are there minuses? And the lack of nuance and the lack of objectivity and the lack of ground truth, I think, is one of the most terrifying trends in the last several years that kind of worries me.
You just got me going down a dystopian rabbit hole in my head. I don't think there's a more large scale effort in tech right now to actually reduce carbon emissions than what we're seeing in Bitcoin mining. And it's all private sector funded. There's no government intervention in any nation. There's no government grants. This is all Bitcoin miners doing the work, because it's incentivized within the model for us to drive to the lowest cost energy source. And so wasted energy is the lowest cost energy source. We are incentivized to figure out how to capture that and get that carbon out of the environment. And it's happening globally, and we're not having that conversation, which to me is just wild. And to your point about that kind of political division and disassociation from facts, let's call it, one of the things that's terrifying for me right now is we're starting to see conversations bubble up about regulation around power use. And so that we go down a very slippery slope when we start to decide what workloads are deserving of what power at a centralized government level. I mean, let's just be honest. I come from the traditional data center world. A lot of traditional workloads and what's running on the internet is not particularly favorable content. There's a ton of shady shit running on the, or sorry.
It's a PG show. It's okay.
Running on the running on the internet and running in traditional data centers. And we've never had a conversation about, are those workloads worthy of power? And how do we regulate the power going to offshore gambling or whatever other workloads are happening that I won't get into? But now all of a sudden, because of Bitcoin, we're having a values conversation about, is that a worthy workload to apply power to? And we've actually seen one country go so far as to say that they will be involved in the distribution of power by workload, which I think is just a slippery slope that nobody has fully thought out, that could have wildly problematic downstream ramifications. And I just think it's so wild that it's now on the back of these like really, really exciting new technologies, we're debating their value and their merits. But all these other workloads, we have not applied the same conversation to values based around power usage for the last two decades. It's quite something.
Yeah, but I will tell you, I actually don't think it's that surprising if you think about the fact that the child pornography industry, offshore gambling, all of these things were not direct competitors to the central banking system and the sovereignty of money, right? And so you have to remember that at the end of the day, when you have an alternative financial system, and there are many Bitcoin maxis who, if they could, and some, I've met some who try actively to only exist in Bitcoin, try to get their salaries in Bitcoin, try to only spend Bitcoin. Like if they could fully convert and live on a fiat currency-less system, they would. And when you think about that in terms of its ramifications with globalization, in terms of a person's ability to opt out of the traditional finance system completely, that's a whole nother, that is a whole nother ball game when you're talking about what is a government, what is a government's response to that? And granted, panic, right? Knee-jerk reactions, like just trying to stop the inevitable. But I hear you. I just don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's a government's fear-based response to a completely alternative opt-out, a viable opt-out to the traditional financial system.
Possibly.
But that assumes that they can stop it. That's such a naive view for them to take. China banned Bitcoin and Bitcoin completely recovered within 6 months and it had 50% of the hash rate. Bitcoin doesn't care about borders. It is completely borderless. It will continue to move on regardless of what any government says. It will just naturally continue to find its path. You can't, just because you regulate power consumption in one jurisdiction, that isn't going to have any impact on the health or viability of Bitcoin as a store of value or an asset class.
No, all it will do is impact, you know, the business operating in that jurisdiction at the time, which I think, Amanda, to your point, may be their goal. I know the country you're talking specifically about, Jamie, and they try and state that the way they regulate it due to harsh weather conditions is what they say. And so, you know, when they ask, you know, these crypto miners to shut down, let's say 60 to 70% of their fleet due to they need to get power back to the grid, that's the explanation that they give as far as they tell the miners.
Yeah, I have a feeling that stuff's only going to get worse. No offense, as a former federal prosecutor who watched crime flow, like you can't stop crime,
no,
right? Like you can regulate it, you can try to prevent it. And when people are like, oh, the move of illicit finance to crypto, I'm like, I don't know where you think illicit finance goes. It goes from cash to checks to GPR. It goes to the thing that makes it the most easiest to crime, because they don't stop criming. They just figure out a different way to make money.
They don't stop criming.
It's like, yeah, no, it's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know what world you live in. Like, and it's funny because even as a prosecutor, sometimes I had to remind myself, you're not going to solve the problem of crime, you know, which is sometimes, you know, what you have to remember. So, okay, so we'll end on one final, I don't know if it's spicy, but I think it's an interesting question. Hot topic that came out lately, the approved spot ETFs. Any impact on publicly traded miners? Are you seeing that have an impact?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely had an impact. It's had an impact in liquidity and how where kind of retail investors are moving their money, because a Bitcoin miner really, Bitcoin miner, some exchanges, MicroStrategy used to act as proxies to Bitcoin in a traditional equity vehicle. In fact, some of the early days of Bitcoin miners like Hut 8 and Hive, when they first started, it was really the value proposition was to serve as a proxy to give people access to Bitcoin exposure, but within their traditional equity portfolio. And so it's definitely had an impact. We've seen the correlation adjust significantly between Bitcoin movement and publicly traded Bitcoin miner equity movements. And that's been new since the spots came out. I think there is an argument to be made that that we saw the same thing kind of happen with gold and gold miners when the gold ETFs were first approved, and then gold miners kind of they lagged a little bit, but then ultimately recovered and became a proxy or an alpha play on gold. So I think the expectation is of the industry is we'll see something similar happen. But it's certainly a new environment, and I think everybody's kind of cautiously watching how liquidity will continue to move. And obviously, the halving is happening in a few days. That's going to have an impact on miner profitability temporarily. It will drop hash rate temporarily, and then we should, if it follows traditional cycles, we should see Bitcoin start to move as that supply shock sets in the next 3 to 6 months. But we don't know if the cycle is going to repeat the way it historically has, because there's more noise in the signals now, which includes the spot ETFs in the US.
And Sarah, I don't know if you want to add anything or if you want to end on the sexy thing to look out for in insurance. I'm the child of two people in the insurance industry, so it is not weird for me to say the cool, sexy thing in insurance, but anything that's on your radar or that you're looking at in the near future?
Yeah, actually, what is directly on my radar right now is the halving. We've been talking very much about the halving and what that means for the cost of our clients' assets. And what does that mean for the price of their miners? Are they going to adjust their values on their policy? What we've been doing is just, you know, checking with our clients, making sure, are they good to go? Are there any things that we should expect? You know, are they going to be procuring more machines? Just, you know, the halving is going to be a pretty big historical moment, I think, in terms of how an insurance carrier will not necessarily like handle it, but I think it's just going to be very interesting because it's a very big impact to the industry that we're serving, right? And so how is that going to trickle down to the insurance carrier? Is it going to have an impact at all? We're about to find out.
I'm aging myself, but is it a silly analogy to say that this feels like the Y2K of Bitcoin a little bit? Like a lot of hype leading up to something that's kind of going to be like, oh, there we go.
There's definitely hype. It's not the first halving. So we've gone through it before. But in terms of...
So wouldn't it be a quartering? That this is my lack of math skills. Like if you're having a halve, is it not the quartering?
It's still a halving. No. You know,
the block reward drops in half or by 50% every 4 years. So that's the cycle. And it will continue to do so into 2160 or 2140. I forget the very last Bitcoin comes into circulation. But yeah, I don't know. It's just an every 4 year cycle.
Again, I go back to, wouldn't a half of a half be a quarter? I feel like there's a marketing opportunity that the quartering was really lost here, that using the halving again was kind of like habit, where I'm like, the quartering of Bitcoin could have been really fun.
The quartering. Yeah, definitely good analogies.
I don't know. Maybe it's something that we start on the podcast and we see if it catches on. But Sarah, if the halving, or as I'm, or the quartering, as we're trying to get it called, but if the halving is as stressful for you as April 15th is for all of my friends in tax world, I hope that everything goes well, and that all is well on the other side of that. And I will say, I think this is the coolest conversation that I've had about mining. I remember when I was at Chainalysis, we had a really cool cryptocurrency fundamentals course that talked about, you know, the mempools and the hashing and how the proof of work worked. And we didn't have time to go into that today, but I would encourage folks, if you're listening to this, to dive deep on that. It's super fascinating. The whole discussion about proof of work versus proof of stake, I'm sure we'll cover that on a future episode. If we're lucky, maybe we bring these fabulous ladies back. But I just want to say, Sarah, Jamie, I can't imagine two better subject matter experts to talk about crypto mining, crypto insurance of mining, all things halving, quartering, whatever it's going to be. But I just want to say thank you immensely. I know our members love objective, nuanced, educational conversations, and this one was one of our greats. So thank you so much. We want to say a huge thank you to our sponsor, Bracewell LLP, to Emily Kobrowski for her invaluable technical support, and everyone listening, positive or negative, we welcome your feedback and we hope you'll rate us online. And let us know if you have comments, questions, or thoughts for future podcasts. For anyone who's interested in learning more about the Association for Women in Cryptocurrency, our global events, or the advocacy initiatives we're working on to increase inclusion, please check out our public LinkedIn page, our Twitter or Instagram pages at AWIC Global, or our webpage at www.womenincrypto.org, which is also where you can sign up and join. Sarah, Jamie, I want to say thank you again for an amazing conversation. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we hope to see you next time.